Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide, of course, to better cricket. It's for coaches, it's for players, that's for anyone wanting to improve their game in any way. My name's David Hinchliffe, and joining me on the line today, as they usually do, are two very fine cricket coaches. The first is the director of cricket at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris. I'm still saying cricket coaching at the end of that, but I keep my...
Yeah, you've done well. Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it, to take the word coaching off at the end of something. So congrats on that, Dave. Doing a very fine
Thanks.
Job.
Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. No problem with your title, Lavers. I've been saying the same thing for years now.
Yeah, it might be changing soon, actually, but we'll see.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's exciting. Okay, well, we'll wait and see on that one.
Oh, really nothing exciting, though, genuinely. Headmaster's a very common thing. People have heard of it.
Headmaster. Speaking of things changing, the topic that I wanted to start the show with this week was new things that we're doing as we approach the UK cricket season. It's a time to think about what we're going to be doing differently during the season than perhaps we didn't do last year. So I wanted to get your thoughts, both from a coaching perspective and from the perspective of some of the players that you coach. What are the things that you are going to be doing differently this year that perhaps you didn't do last year?
Well, we're going to become more objective, actually. We've got more in-play monitoring systems coming in. So an example is we've got a speed gun which is used within baseball to monitor not just the ball speed going into the contact from a pitcher, but also the ball exit speed coming off a bat. So it's something that we're working with at the moment in our training sessions, and it's got a range of 500 feet and picks up the ball velocity. So we're going to have that running, not in every game, but in certain games we're going to have that, just to see how our training numbers and our match numbers are correlating. We've also got GPS units as well, which we're working with our fast bowlers presently, but come the season we're going to also have those in operation around the field, seeing how far people go, what their top speeds are, relating that again to our training our training results, and also heart rate as well, because we're interested in looking. There's been a little bit of research into heart rate and how people control anxiety and how people recover after running hard between the wickets and then having to do it again and stuff. So we're looking at creating some really good base data around those. And because technology now is so wearable in terms of GPS and heart rate, it's not invasive at all. It's not going to detract from performance. I should imagine we'll get a few heroes trying to cover a bit more ground than they did before, trying to get their numbers up. But as Kevin Peterson did, basically running 20 yards every between balls and stuff like that in international matches. But once we've got through that education piece, just as we did with Kev all those years ago, I think it's going to be really fascinating to see what comes out of it. So we've got very geeky, very let's go and exploit a few budgets around school, and that's the way that we're going, and it will be interesting, but probably not that interesting to most club coaches or school coaches around that don't have the budget. So I'm sorry about gloating, but it's going to be fun.
And so what you're looking for here is building up a base of information that you can build from. So rather than saying we know this at the moment and we're trying to improve, we're just trying to find what that baseline is that right?
Yeah, very much so. And also to inspire the next generations, really. So when I look at our top age group now, we've got two or three boys in our top age group that have got really good chances of picking up professional contracts with their counties next year. And hopefully one or two of those will go on and do some great things in the game. But if we can get their base levels down, when guys come into the school and they're aspiring to reach professional cricket level, instead of going, oh, you've got to have a top elbow that does this and all of the normal things, and you've got to be able to convert scores big and all of that, we can actually put some numbers behind it. You know, not too dissimilar to the pitch vision system as well. So the more objective we can get, and as long as you apply your language and use all of this stuff sensibly, then it can only be a good thing for creating benchmarking, which can give us a much better idea of whether somebody's on track or what areas that they need to develop in order to reach their goals. I'm a huge one for behaviours and aspirations being aligned, but if we can get to a position where our behaviours, our performance numbers and our aspirations are aligned, then we give ourselves the best chance of success.
We're going to be doing something similar to that in terms of data gathering, a bit more low tech. I'll tell you about that in a minute. I want to hear what your plans are for the coming season when it comes to new ideas and initiatives.
We've got a few new things and a few things that are existing that are being transferred. So we're trying to filter some of the things we do at first team level down the levels a little bit, which will be good. So hopefully we'll have under 15s and if possible under 14 cricketers as well, getting some of the same access to equipment and facilities and technology and that kind of thing that the first 11 get on a weekend when they're playing. So that's kind of an ongoing thing that we're trying to feed down the school as we go along. We've already got those younger guys accessing a strength and conditioning specialist, which they never had before. At the younger age group, so we're very lucky to have Marcus with us now, who is working with a lot of the guys and getting them fitter and stronger, which is good. The thing we're going to do that's a little bit new, and we're going to have a meeting about it later in the week, is what data we want to take out of our games and what footage we want to take out of our games. So we're probably going to adjust our tagging process so that the information we get is information we're going to use. And sometimes we've done it, and initially when we did it a couple of years ago when we started doing some video tagging work, we kept it very, very simple just because it was the first year and didn't get too carried away. And then last year we probably had more information and more variables than we needed in terms of the outcome, but it settled down quite nicely. And just we need to make sure that again with a new group of players at that level, it's information they see the benefit of and it's information they want, and if there's anything in addition that we can offer in terms of information from that process, then we will try and offer it to them. So that's a slight adjustment. The other good addition is we've got I've got another member of staff with me on a weekend. I've got two more members of staff in a weekend, actually, because a lot of the time last year I ended up on my own, which was a little bit frustrating, because I would be on the book and trying to do the tagging and the camera and all that kind of stuff in addition to coaching. But I'm very lucky to have the world famous year 8 scorer Benedict Blythe with me. You may have heard of him, and yes, there will be clubs out there who are getting jealous at the prospect of that. But I've also got Steve Dean with me as well, who is a maths teacher at the school but has played, I think, 1,000 minor counties games and scored 10,000 minor counties hundreds, something like that, he tells me. those statistics may not be correct, but a very experienced cricketer who's done a reasonable amount of coaching in the school and has had other commitments around the school which have limited him in the last couple of years, but he's going to be back on board with the first 11 offering his experience, which will be a really good addition to what we're doing, and it'll help me out no end.
That is a crucial thing, isn't it? Not trying to take on too much. We've talked about this before, haven't we? That it's very easy, because especially when it's the situations that we're talking about, club cricket, school cricket, that kind of thing. It's very easy to take on as much, be ambitious and think you can take it all on, and then halfway through the season realise that actually it's probably too much work for one person here and I've got to find some way to get through to the end by myself. But finding people to help you and do little things for you and even do lots of things for you is such an important aspect, isn't it? Is certainly from a coaching point of view. And of course, it's going to help the players because, you know, suddenly they're not completely reliant on one person to do everything.
Gareth mentioned that last week, didn't he, when he talked about the club structure and having a captain who's responsible. It might be 2 weeks ago, actually, now, captain responsible thing. But if he can shed 5% of his role to 3 or 4 people, and that means that 20% of his role is being managed by someone else, then that makes your life a lot easier and just takes a little bit of pressure off, and it increases the quality of what you deliver in the areas that you're retaining.
We're speaking of doing extra things. We are this year going to have a bit more of a focus on fielding, and what that means is that I am going to be attempting to increase the amount of information that I gather during a game for fielding information, because we got some basic data last year, you know, how many catches we caught, how many we dropped, how many misfields we had, all that kind of thing, but it was quite basic. But it gave us a good picture, and we now have something we want to focus on, which is specifically making sure that we catch as many as we can, because that was an area where we struggled a bit last year. So with that in mind, I'm just going to focus a bit more on that and on a few more details about where catches, how difficult catches are, where they're caught, where they're dropped, who's doing those catches and drops. Still relatively basic, but just a little bit more detail on that. And then the other thing that we're doing is we're going to be keeping track live of some of the information that isn't necessarily available firsthand from the scoreboard. So things like how we're doing with any particular batting in any particular phase of the game, rather than just looking at the overall run rate, or looking at how much control we've got of the game in terms of, you know, numbers of times that we're playing and missing and things like that. So I'll be able to, I've done a spreadsheet that will keep all, as I enter that data as I go along, it'll just keep all that information up to date, so we can have a look at that at any point of the match and get a better view on how we're doing during the game, as well as looking at data after the game and saying, oh, you know, this area here is something that we can work on. So that's my sort of ambition for this year, is to have a bit more data and have access to that data a little bit more quickly than we had last year. I don't know how well we're going to do, but we've got several preseason games for me to see how simple that is to track that data as we go along. And hopefully it's going to be nice and easy, and we can get more from it and bring more into our practice sessions between games.
It's going to be a bit more work again, but hopefully if all you want to do is make sure the extra work you're doing is bringing an extra outcome, don't you? And if a little bit of extra effort brings a little bit more improvement, then it's all worthwhile, isn't it?
Yeah, and you've got...
Do you want Steve Dean's stats? I've got them here.
Yeah, go for it.
1,000 games, 10,000 hundreds, am I correct?
No, not quite as many either of those. 10,163 runs in minor counties championship at an average of 38.21. 51 half centuries, 19 centuries, top score 173 not out.
Played, sir.
Yeah, came back.
He holds a record for the highest batting average in the season for Staffordshire, which came in 1992 when he averaged 96.42, scoring 675 runs.
I believe it might have been that year. It was around there. He scored 100 against the West Indies as well.
Did he now?
Yeah.
Right. I'm just gonna check that because I've got that
breaking
here.
News.
If he
breaking
did
news. Every year,
if
every
he
year
did.
Joey Benjamin at Reigate comes and says, "Where's Steve? That man hit the ball."
Right, okay. According to this, on the Cricket Archive, that
he nicks off
is
for none.
Correct.
Okay.
That
maybe
is
not.
Incorrect.
What did he get? Did he get anything?
And if it was, then it was a. It wasn't a first class game or a List A game.
I don't think it would have been either. No, I think it would have been a other. But I don't know. Joe,
yeah.
I'll catch up with Joe and ask him, or Joey or Steve.
Not on my record here. Well, in that case, I was really good because I played in lots of games
that
would have been described as others.
It covers quite a wide gamut,
and
doesn't
my record,
it?
My record in other games would have been better than my record in either List A or First Class.
Are you including beach cricket and backyard cricket in other?
No, because I was no good at either of those either.
If Joey Benjamin's
so
bowling, you include what you want.
Yeah, I really was a better player in other forms of the game, other than First Class and List A, that would be safe to say.
And now it's time to get back to some more up-to-date cricket. It's the questions portion of the show, where we answer questions that have been sent in by listeners or readers to the Pitch Vision website, and we do our best to answer them. And then we pick a winner of a prize from the best question, which is the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the first person who sent in a question this week is Ben. And Ben says, a little over a season ago, I changed my guard to leg stump because I was being dismissed LBW. It's brought me more runs, but now I find myself getting dismissed caught behind on balls on or just outside off stump. My question is, with fine edges to the wicketkeeper, is it good bowling or can I counter this in some way?
Yeah, this is a classic, isn't it? And we see it so often. I'm prone to LBW, so if I get my legs out of the way of it, then I'm going to get out LBW less. And of course, if your legs aren't directly in line with the stumps, then the chances of you being LBW are obviously decrease. And it's something that I played around with as a player, and as a result, I got bowled a lot more than I did LBW, was pretty much what happened. And I was also really good at edging it to the keeper. So I suppose what you've done is you've reduced the instance of one thing happening and increased the instance of the other. And what you've got to weigh up is, has your overall outcome in terms of the numbers that features on the end of a scorecard and over the course of a season gone up enough that you can stick with this, or is there some way of maybe meeting it halfway to try and open up more scoring opportunities, less balls becoming dismissal balls, and taking the keeper out of the equation to a certain extent? You can never take it totally out of the equation. So personally, I'm a fan of getting people in line with the ball as much as possible. Not so much that, you know, you make yourself into a monster LBW candidate, but getting the ball in line with your body as much as possible gives us a better chance of having control around our contacts, and we can transfer our weight through the ball better, and all of those things. But in order to do that, if we are gonna stick our legs in the way of the stumps, then we've got to learn to A, get the front pad out of the way, and be able to play straight down the ground. And many players do this really well. So my preference, and I don't do this with everybody because it's not always about my preference, would be to get myself in a position where I'm covering the stumps and covering the outside edge a little bit better. So instead of it just being a channel ball that I can't quite reach with control and I end up edging to the keeper, I've got much better chance of being able to dominate that ball and to be able to control that ball. So that would be my starting point as a coach. But again, I do reiterate that I've had players that get across the stumps and play down the ground who've gone well, and equally I've got players that batted on leg stump and worked across the crease with their movement and also, you know, hit the ball pretty well. But I would say the higher you go, the less chance you've got of being successful with that mode of batting on leg stump and working across the stump with your front pad, because the nicks come into play. The higher you go, the better the wicketkeepers, the bigger the carry, the better the keeper, the slip catches and gully, and you get exposed. So that would be my view.
I guess also it's one of those things where you have to sort of look at the problem first of all and say, is the description of the problem what's actually happening? Because if he's got out a couple of times to a couple of balls that have seamed away and he's nicked it off, that's very different from something which is becoming a habit. So it's always difficult to know for sure, especially with the limited amount of information that you get from the number of times you're out over a season. But you need to assess, whether you assess it yourself or have someone watch and assess it for you. Is it something technical, or is it, as he said, has he been unlucky and he had a couple of good bowlers who can seam the ball away from him and they've picked out a slight weakness of his, which is not that great outside off stump, which, you know, it tends to be true for most people. So that would be the first thing I would think about. Is it the problem? Is the problem as described or not? And then work from there. What do you think, Lavis?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. You can often draw a conclusion by just looking at the way you were dismissed or thinking about the way you dismissed, and there are often going to be other bits of information that aren't necessarily as accurate that get drawn into your process of thinking, and you can remember back to what you feel happened, but as we know, that's not always exactly the case. And the other thing I'd consider is not just looking, if you have that video analysis and you have the ability to go back and look at it, don't just look at the ball that was bowled. Look at the balls around it, look at the other times that you played and missed, look at the other times that you hit the ball, and compare the whole thing, because effectively you're setting up using the technique all the time. So whether it's the one you nicked or it's not the one you nicked, the process is still the same. So are you having limitations that are being created by this, such as nicking the ball off on a regular basis, or are you getting a good ball, or are you creating things that are going to outweigh that? And it's very easy to say that we want to make sure everything's perfect so we can play all shots in all directions, which would be great, but there are obviously other players who are at a different end of their career, and they've got methods that work for them, and they would rather accept some limitations if that offers them some other strengths along the way, rather than making a change. But definitely think about viewing the process as a whole, so rather than just looking at the one shot, and if you can have some evidence to support your thinking, whether it's from someone else who gives their unbiased or unled opinion, because you can easily put words into their mouth, so get someone else's opinion, but if you can get some real good data, get some visual images and have a look at them over a period of time. I guess if you can have that ability to preempt the problem or identify the problem in a very short space of time, that's a really useful skill that some people will have, and that allows them to adapt very quickly, whether it's from week to week or maybe even within a net session, within a game, they spot something going wrong and they can make an adjustment there and then. But for a lot of us, it'll be more a case of allowing a bit of observation over a period of time before we commit to a big change.
And it has happened a couple of times to me, in that a player will come to me and say, whenever I face this kind of ball, this happens every time. And then so the first thing I do, obviously, is turn to pitch vision and say, well, let's have a look at all those balls that you faced in the nets, and we'll see whether that's the case or not. And often the answer is not, when I face this kind of ball, this happens. It's happened a couple of times and they remember it, and the other 20 times when it didn't happen, they've forgotten it because it was what they were expecting to happen. So that's where video analysis, pitch vision is a great tool, because you can literally pull out all the length balls that are on or just outside off stump and say, all right, let's have a look what you actually do in this situation, and then we can work from there.
And that's, you know, going back to our first part of our conversation today around measurables, that's fantastic, because even if we've got that video down, just say on a video camera, we can rewind it, go to that specific ball, have a look at it. And that actually might be the only time that you've ever done that in your life, but that will be the ball that you ingrain in your own mind, that's what you do. Whereas having the measurable element of it and the monitored element of it with something like pitch vision means that we can say, yeah, that's an anomaly rather than the norm, because we can prove that, because it demonstrates that. So that's the real benefit of having that type of system, as opposed to just a video camera, because if we pick one out in isolation, then we can start ingraining that in our own minds as being what we do all the time, when actually it could be the only time we've ever actually fallen over or played it like that in our lives.
Next question's from Cavian, and I've included this because I think the answer is one of those things that everyone thinks they know, but I don't know how much most people know, but we'll find out. The question is, how do I read a turf wicket? Everyone knows this, don't they?
Do they?
Well, I don't. Everyone seems to.
I'm terrible at this. I remember my first ever first-class game as a cricket coach. We were at Old Trafford, and Marcus Truscothick walked up to me and he said, what do you think about the wicket coach? And I said, I was hoping you could guide, because I've got absolutely no idea whatsoever. And I think all of those people who say that they do know, do you really? You know, occasionally I think anybody can probably see that it's going to be as flat as a pancake. But how many times have we turned up at cricket grounds and gone, oh, this is going to be an absolute belter, and all of a sudden, because of a subsurface, which you can't see, that actually it goes a little bit up and down? could anybody have really predicted that this test match over in Bangalore, which is usually, well, it's certainly one of the best striking wickets I've seen in international cricket from a one-day perspective, definitely, would have reacted like it did to balls going up and down and left and right and all over in that test match between India and Australia. You know, when I saw that the game was at Bangalore, I expected a run fest, and that's the complete opposite of what we got. So, yeah. You know, I suppose that's why we watch telly, and that's why we watch Ian Botham and his mates read a pitch and yeah, all of that malarkey. What tends to happen is their read on the pitch gets better once two innings have been played on it because yeah, they've got some reference point. So I'm somebody who, you know, if somebody asked me, I'd go, well, what do you think? Because I haven't got a Scooby. And I've been around the game a lot. Maybe that's just me being useless, but I'm not the best at reading it. You've got to play on it whichever way round, whether you bat first or bowl first, and you will be unsurprised to know that I just go, I'll get on with it and see what happens.
It happened to us this year. We went to an away game, and it looked like a terrible wicket. This season just gone, I should say. It looked like a terrible wicket. We won the toss, we stuck them in, they scored 215 and bowled us out for 195 or something like that. So,
we had a game exactly like that. So it rained. We're playing at Brading Cricket Club on the Isle of Wight, and it rained really hard. And for some reason, the square hadn't drained well enough for them to be able to play. But they were going real well in the league, so they decided to cut on the outfield right next to the square, where it was slightly drier, cut a pitch and put the lines down. So we were on the outfield effectively, and we're all like, oh my dear goodness, I mean, what's going to happen here? And I batted at four and didn't even put my pads on. And my dad and a guy called Keith Dubbins put on 200 and something for the first wicket. And then, well, actually, I did put my pads on, and I took them off because Dad and a guy called Louis Mark Hermesage just kept smacking it everywhere. And I spent the whole afternoon fetching balls out of adjoining fields. And, you know, I just think it's a brilliant game because of that. Mm. Yeah, good. If you are an expert on pitches, then can you come and teach me? Because I'm not.
I don't know if anyone saw last night's game, but it was New Zealand South Africa, and it was day one, and it was down in Otago, and anyone who's been out to New Zealand knows that it's generally not the driest, warmest place in the world. So South Africa have turned up, and they've picked their three or four seamers or whatever it would be for the match, and they've gone out and done the toss in the middle, and as they've done the toss, they've exchanged team sheets, and to Du Plessis's like terror, he's read the team sheet and realised that New Zealand have picked two spinners. And suddenly he's just like panicked a little bit. He's won the toss and realised that all their plans have been about him bowling first. New Zealand have picked two spinners. Apparently the pitch is actually 3-4 days old, and he's just panicked and said, "We'll have a bat." And none of the batsmen knew what was going on. Everyone thought that they were going to have a win toss bowl, and that's again hadn't read the pitch conditions, hadn't read the situation. Yet the locals and the New Zealand team and the coaching staff and the head coach, who's from Otago, all knew exactly what was going on. They'd read the pitch based on the fact they'd seen it 100 times before, more than anything else. And that's where a little bit of a local knowledge, which isn't necessarily reading the pitch but just experience of the same pitch, is really, really valuable. And you can come in and look at something, and because it's dark brown, which it was dark brown with long green grass on, everyone was thinking, just have a bowl, get the seamers on. And Jeetan Patel was on within I think Jeetan Patel was on in the sixth over.
Well, there we are, Kevin. We haven't really answered your question then, but in a roundabout way, I guess we have, is saying, you know...
With difficulty, yeah, is the answer.
Don't worry about it too much. Do the best you can, but don't think you're ever going to get all the answers, because you'll be as wrong as often as you're right, even the best are that. Although maybe Botham might deny that he's ever made a mistake on that, I don't know.
Well, he would deny that. He's one of the best at getting it right all of the time in his own head, and he's done it brilliantly over the years, made two careers out of it, and is a top bloke, so there you go,
exactly. Wouldn't have him any other way.
No, exactly.
And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. We are going to head off. But before we do that, we just need to decide on one more thing. And that's the winner of this week's competition, of course. The online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the two questions were Ben's one about changing his guard and the effect that had. And Cavian's question about reading a wicket. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
Well, I thought they were two good questions. The second one, I need an answer to.
Yeah.
But Ben's question, that's something that's common. I think we see that a lot with people making changes to avoid getting out, but often it can create other challenges for us that that we then need to try and get over.
Correct. And if you want some more advice on reading the pitch, then if you're over 18, Cavian, then check out the 12th man's... Tony Gregg pitch analysis. They're very detailed.
Billy Birmingham.
Billy Birmingham, yep. Excellent parody. Right. And so, Gareth, if someone wanted to get in touch with us, ask their question and have their chance of winning the prize, what would they need to do?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. There's also other ways to get in touch with us through social media. Pitch Vision has its own social media platform, so you can go to pitchvision.com and do that. Or you can go to Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, or indeed Twitter @pitchvisionacad. You can subscribe to the show by going to your favourite podcast app, doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and then tapping on subscribe when you find us in there. And if you want to listen to the show via our website, you can stream it from the website, or you can download the show for another time, get all the show notes and see all the other articles and information that we've got over there at pitchvision.com. Head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the details. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, boys.